G'day, this is Will.
And this is Charlie.
And if you're a fan of our podcast, TOEFOP, we have some exciting news for you.
Will's finally achieved his lifetime ambition and become best friends with Keanu Reeves.
Sadly, no. But we are bringing TOEFOP back to the live stage for a run of shows at the Basement Comedy Club in Melbourne.
That's right. June 15th, July 6th and August 3rd.
And Keanu, if you're listening, you're on the door. And the rest of Dogstar, bring them too.
Just search TOEFOP Live at trybooking.com or click the link in the episode description. And now, on with the show.
A listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax. Oh, whips. Everyone relax. This is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching. And by the way, if you are watching, you just saw the
Once
most
again.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
Like that was a real, as if I were on
aircraft carrier.
An aircraft carrier and I was really having to belt it out my communications and you weren't expecting it.
No.
And my... you reacted as if I was going to start this podcast by punching you in the face.
Well, you really so just, aggressive.
Yeah.
Like a hand.
But even from where I am, I don't think, I think you're in a safe distance. It would involve me like to actually hit your face from
Try
where
we're. Like, you got good reach.
Like.
Oh, no, you couldn't. You could swipe
without
me.
Getting
Extend
into the
fingers.
Microphone.
Try and slap me. Oh, yeah. Can't reach you either.
Yeah.
Like if we got really like pissed off,
do you reckon they designed this for like radio, you know, shows that can't get along
what
with
if,
each other?
Who's and the like, tallest listener personality?
Oh yeah, who's the tallest person in
like
podcasting?
That Luke Darcy.
Luke Darcy's pretty tall. He's
yeah,
taller than
he'd
me.
He'd have reach.
What? Oh, he's, yeah, okay. So Luke
what,
Darcy.
How
he
is
does,
he tall?
Howie's no. I mean, Howie's not as short as you'd expect him to be. He's but he's not quite my height.
Yeah,
but.
I don't know.
Be
what
taller
about
than that. They've got some
podcasters?
Other footballers, like, but most of their footballers that they have on air.
I mean, the problem with all
Max
like
Gorn does some stuff on the Triple M network.
Yeah,
would he, he'd be taller than Darcy.
I'm thinking more exclusive podcasters though, and I think of all the big podcasters on the listener network.
Who is the biggest podcaster?
Well, probably Abby, right? Like Abby or any of
no,
those.
No, I mean, who is the biggest?
Oh, the tallest.
Podcast? Like that's because that's
podcaster.
Interesting. Like, who
could that
the,
be our point of difference?
Right, that we're the tallest.
Tallest podcast.
So we start doing this.
Because I'm average height. We've established
no,
that.
But we start doing this like two kids in a trench coat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's the world's tallest podcast.
Okay, so we do that for one of the podcasts that we do without the other. So philosophy, next philosophy you record, I'll sit on your shoulders and you just put an overcoat. Oh, no, that doesn't work because people are coming to see you. You've got this on, though. It's going to be hard.
Oh, no.
You've got to get on my shoulders.
Hang on. How was
overcoat.
It easier when you were on my shoulders?
Well, because I'm lighter.
It was
than
easier
you.
For you.
Well, yeah,
the
but
shoulder
you're,
sitter.
But you're heavy.
It's always
you put the
easier
smaller
for
guy,
the shoulder sitter. Yeah,
but you put the smaller guy on the shoulder.
But you're
shoulders.
Not even that much smaller. What do you weigh?
Like 80 kilos?
Yeah, I weigh like 82, 83
you
kilos.
You do not weigh 83.
Absolutely, 100% the case.
Really?
Yeah, because I got no muscles.
I guess it's all just
you're
baggy
all like,
clothing.
Yeah, it's like and baggy skin over a skeleton. It's like a fat bag of skin over a skeleton. Like it doesn't actually weigh that much.
Yeah, I guess
right.
Okay.
Whereas
bag
like yours
bones.
Is all full of like lumps.
Yeah,
you're
little
like,
lumps.
You're
little
like,
heavy lumps.
Your skin is full of lumps, whereas mine's full of like
my lovely
just an ooze
Charlie lumps.
That like kind of just kind of
a goo that kind of more or less holds the bones.
Like someone
in shape.
Who tried to make a chicken sausage without taking the bones out. That's what my body looks like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you don't think you think you going on my shoulders would probably be because I do
What's
strength.
Equal?
I do strength.
What
but
we've
I, but
just
I do
worked
strength
out
training.
From that is. Oh, yeah, so you're better.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're in a much better position.
And it makes,
plus, I have bad hips
and, also people
and a
are,
bad back.
And people are coming in to do philosophy.
Carry
so
me.
It's
finally, you carrying me.
It's going to be your face because it's your podcast. Okay, so
right.
do you word up, you know, the guest that's coming in, that this is what the deal is going to be? Like, we'll be in place. I'll be sitting down. You've climbed on. We've got a step ladder in. You've climbed on my shoulders. Amy's brought an overcoat in, wrapped it around. You're just sitting there.
Yep.
And then let's say it's a big name guest. Like, who's your dream philosophy guest?
Oh.
Like, comedian, right? Like a Patton Oswalt
or someone
like that.
I mean, like, that's, I think the only person that we could debut this with. Like, and this is, I'm not saying this person is my absolute dream, but definitely in my sort of top five, top 10 guests I would love to have on the podcast. But I think particularly appropriate for what we're about to do, a person who would get it, who would understand it, Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah.
If we ever got Kevin Smith on the philosophy, because it would be sad to not have you part of that right?
Yeah.
Like, this started because of Smodcast. So if Kevin Smith comes on philosophy, I get on your shoulders, Amy puts a massive overcoat on.
Yeah.
And then I go in and, like, interview.
And do you
Kevin
run
Smith.
It like a normal philosophy?
I don't mention it.
Or do I? Okay. So, and do I, am I whispering stuff to you to ask him, or do I get to open the coat and occasionally say something like Quato from Total Recall?
Yeah, I reckon Quato. I reckon the Quato option. He doesn't, you just
stick my face
button, stick your face out.
Go to Mars.
There's another microphone there. You know, like when someone's going to play the guitar and they set up two microphones. So there's another microphone there, a shorter microphone that's at your face height, but at the moment you're concealed by the trench coat. So when I sit down and I'm like, g'day, Kevin.
And you know the good thing about that is for a large portion of Kevin Smith's career, he wore that trench coat, that Silent Bob trench coat. That was his thing. So initially,
he'll think that's fun.
Yeah, it's a
tribute. Come in Silent Bob style.
Fake beard.
Fake beard.
Baseball cap on backwards. Snoogans to the noogans or whatever. He doesn't really talk. So.
Then I take off the beard and the cap.
Yeah.
Like, they come off, reveal actual me. Trench coat stays on.
Yeah.
Until about, like, whenever you feel like you want to ask a question, there's this little microphone that's down there the whole time creating some sort of expectation. You open it up, but you're dressed as Jay.
Jay.
Yeah,
right.
You come out Jason Mewes style, long hair, pop out.
Do you think there's any chance in the world that if he hadn't met you or he hadn't done any reads, like his publicist books it and that he comes in and just sees this enormous guy sitting there, that he just for a second goes, oh man, this guy's huge.
Yeah.
Like, I can understand why he's such a popular comedian down here. Like, look at him, he's a freak.
Yeah,
like, I'd pay money to see that.
Yeah, but it's a podcast though. So you're just listening to him. I want to
listen
to
the tallest
man.
Yeah, but he would know.
Yeah, I understand.
He would know that you're also a comedian.
Yeah,
and
that's right. He's huge. Huge in Australia.
But do you think that he would straight away go, there's another person under there? I mean, like, how high would it get? So let's say,
we'd probably have to get Amy to say beforehand.
He's enormous. He's got gigantism. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, I'll put, like, you know, when we book guests and I'm giving them all the details of, like, this is where you need to be and when.
Oh,
and also, by the way, the host is 7'8".
Enormous.
Yeah, and please don't mention it.
Please don't mention it.
Don't bring it up.
Don't bring it up. It's definitely not two guys in one trench coat.
Don't ask him to open the trench coat.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't mention the second microphone. Maybe we don't have the second microphone there. Maybe you've got your own microphone. So when you pop out,
you pop out
with a mic.
Yep, Snoogans. I mean, he's already had one heart attack. Let's see if we can.
Oh, yeah, that is a risk. Actually, you know what? It's a risk we kill Kevin Smith with this. And this is now tough to explain to the cops. So what was happening?
Well, we've got lucky where cameras everywhere. And if you subscribe to our Patreon, you can see exactly what happens in this studio. Big news in the Clawson household. We got a puppy.
Oh, my.
We got a new dog. Her name is Rosebud.
Rosebud.
Name chosen by Iona. I think.
Because that was the name of her sled?
I think so.
Yeah.
And she wants to go on to have a media empire.
Okay.
So, and this will be the one thing that she, some childhood motif that she forgets about until her deathbed. She's really thought out her whole life. That's what I like about Iona. She thinks of the big picture. No, I think it was more because when mum was a little girl, she had a horse called Rosie. And so Iona, kids get fixated on specific names. So once they like a name, every toy becomes that name. So everything's been Rosie for a long, long time. And then when we told her we were getting a dog and that she was going to get to name it, like, it was initially Rosie. But then to our surprise, she added the bud on the end and just became Rosebud. And then I was like, oh, that's cool. Because that's not that I dislike Rosie, but I'm like, my sister had a dog called Rosie. And I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I know lots of people have pets of the same name, but you want to be original, right? I feel like I can't name my dog the same name as my sister's dog.
Can I don't. I mean, your sister's dog still.
No.
No. Well, it could be, it could be a tribute.
A tribute, yeah. Yeah. Like naming yourself after a grandparent.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. I think in that situation, like I think if the original Rosie was still on the circuit and then you come along as a whole lot of Rosie, the Rosie cover act.
I
then
played
I think,
that.
Yeah.
I played that when she got to the house, a lot of Rosie. Then I was in the lyrics and like, is this about a girl who sleeps with a lot of dudes? I don't know if this is appropriate to be playing.
Now, so Bud because of marijuana?
No. Rosebud
lives in that part of the world. Probably, you know, gets on the Rosebud. Where does Bud come from? Or is it just like Bud, like Buddy?
She just likes the name.
Or just named Rosebud. But where's she heard Rosebud?
I don't know. Probably from daycare or something like that. I started calling the dog Buddy. Because I like Rosie, but like I said, I've got weird connections because of my sister's dog. So I've started calling it Buddy. And, you know, like when I had Junior had lots of nicknames as well, like Juju, Juniper. That's it. Two nicknames.
You're very creative. As usual, another
improv masterclass.
Studied at Goulier, which is a clown school, so didn't teach you much about improv.
But I do like the idea of her having two names, because then Iona started extrapolating. Mm. She's like, oh, her full name is Rosebud Cute McFerry Ears, or something like that.
Yeah.
I said, that's too obvious. Like, let's give her a like a stronger, kind of more bold name. We haven't decided on what
that's
that will
true.
Be yet.
Yeah, no,
but I do like the idea of
your daughter's creativity. That's...
I do all the time.
No. You lower your expectations a bit.
Well, I just figure, if anything, it's
more expanding.
But you can
change your middle names. You're not doing paperwork.
I'm just saying don't be obvious.
Or documentation.
Hey?
Like Rosebud, and then middle names can change all the time. Her middle names can be whatever.
Cutie Pie.
Yeah, exactly.
Cutie Pie, Pie, Pup, Pup.
Again, what a masterclass.
No, this is not me.
On.
This is my owner's suggestion.
Iona.
Like it's
okay,
all
right.
Pup, pup, cutie, cute pup, right. puppy, Sorry. Variations on cute and dog and pup.
Yeah, well, that's okay. But she'll develop as the years go on.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing too is I'm waiting to see her personality. And it's weird too because I had this loyalty to Junior and it wasn't like he's the only dog I'll ever love. But if you visit our house... There are more framed photos of Junior than of Gemma and I. There are more photos of Junior than Gemma and I on our wedding day in our house. Like that.
That's because like Gemma and you can take photos and Junior couldn't take photos.
That's true. So, but there were people at our wedding who could take photos and those photos exist. But I think it was like we loved that dog and he was so important to us. You know, we got him right at the start of our relationship. He lasted pretty much the whole time that we were together. And then Iona sort of, it was like a tagged in and tagged out.
By that you mean, of course, that was just a funny way to say that. You are still together.
We are still together.
Yes.
Sorry. He was there the whole time.
Yes, that's right.
His
whole life was part of your relationship.
Part of our relationship, yeah. Junior. And so it wasn't that I never wanted another dog, but it was always like, I don't know that I'm sort of the same way with kids as well. It's like, I love my kid, but don't necessarily like other people's kids. It's like, I like mine. But, you know, I'm not one of these like open-hearted people who just loves, you know, everyone. And some same with dogs. It's like,
Your kid and your dog do a whole bunch of things that I think it's perfectly reasonable not to enjoy in other people.
Exactly.
The fact that you love your kid or your dog is why you are willing to live with those. Those things are still unpleasant.
Yeah. Like, the only thing that stops you from like throttling them is the fact that they're, you know, you've seen,
that
you've been
yours,
there for all
that,
and
you
they're
love
yours,
them,
but you've also
you understand
seen,
them. You
exactly,
care for them.
Yeah.
There's a social contract
I don't,
of some kind.
I understand that everyone has their own story and stuff. I just don't care for it.
No, that's right. They've got to get their own people and deal with their own shit.
Exactly.
I'm dealing with what's going on right here, right now.
So I was a bit reluctant, but Jem sort of got on.
But it's been a while now.
Oh, yeah. So when did Junior die? Like 2019. Mm. So 5 years. It'll be 5 years in September. And, we wanted a companion for Iona because she's getting older now and she most likely will probably not get another sibling. So it's like, you know, she has a companion. But Jem was very much on the case of like, I want to find the right dog for Iona's personality. Because we initially, there was a litter born not far from us, a bunch of working dogs, like border collies.
Santo.
Yeah.
Rob,
yeah. Tommy Gleisner. Jane. So we went and... checked out this litter and they were gorgeous pups and stuff. And we did, Gemma and I went and met the pups first and then we took Iona. But I was sort of watching the dogs and I'm like, oh man, we don't, like they need room. Like, you know, they were coming from a farm and high energy and stuff. And I was looking at Iona, and like even with his pup, it was a lot to handle. And so we said, oh, we need to get like a dog that's more suited for where we live, the kind of house we have, and also the kind of child we have. And so Jem, this is what she's great at, is just like research and comparing breeds, watching videos and talking to breeders and stuff. So she finally settled on Cavoodles, which are the most, I think they're the most popular breed going around at the moment, because you get the sort of intelligence of a poodle, but then you get more of a lap dog with the King Charles kind of spaniel thing. And so you don't have to worry about them being like too rambunctious. And also we have a lot of wildlife around where we live, lizards in the hedge, heaps of snakes. Mm-hmm. If we got another Jack Russell, that thing would, he would either kill everything that was in the hedge or be killed by all the snakes.
Yeah, kill or be killed.
Yeah, kill or be killed.
I mean, that's an important lesson for Iona to learn as well.
Yeah. Maybe she'd get lots. And also, I know our last tenants, they had a Jack Russell and they ended up having to rehome it because they said, because it's not a fenced-in property. They're ratters, you know. They look for movement and sound and they want to get out there and see what's going on. Junior was a bit of an exception because I remember when he was still a puppy, he killed a rat or a baby rat or a mouse. I remember he seemed so like horrified. What have I done?
What, like, the horrors of war.
Yeah, he was like Lady Macbeth. He was like, the blood won't come out.
What is this? What's inside me?
Yeah. And so he never, he was never an aggressive dog after that. But it's interesting because I do remember him being a high anxiety dog when we first got him, like as a puppy, super anxious. And it just sort of goes to the ignorance, you know, how we got him when we were early 20s. I think we bought him from a pet store.
Yep.
Clearly he'd been separated from his parents too early. So he had this high anxiety dog.
Yeah, just didn't have an awareness of that probably wasn't the perfect circumstances for that dog.
Didn't really think
it through.
I mean, funnily enough, Will, when you have animals in a pet store, it sort of leads to impulse buys.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like why that's a massive problem.
Because it was interesting. So when we got this new pup who came from a breeder, and this woman had been like, you know, the reason she wanted to go to this woman was not just so much the dog, but speaking to the breeder, got a real sense of this woman, you know, really loves her dogs and had taken care of them. And, you know, there was an expertise that was being passed on. And the difference has been so stark. Like, Rosebud is so chill. Like, she's clearly, she had like the right amount of time with her mum. So there was no sort of separation anxiety, but also like, when Junior came into our house, it was just kind of, and maybe it's the breed as well, Jack Foxy, like the ratters, you know, but just that kind of hypervigilance always. Whereas Rosebud is sort of like, she's like
chill.
Snoop Dogg.
Just like,
she's just like in her bed. She gets up, like even toilet training is going pretty smoothly because we sort of, you know, been a couple of accidents or whatever, but we showed her where the mat is and she's got the hang of that. Poo's sort of, you know, still trying to get, this is where you should be pooing. But the rest of the time, she's just like, there are little bursts of energy where she's like, yeah, I want to play now. But then the rest of the time, she's like, I'm just gonna hang here. You guys, you do you. I'll be over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's really interesting.
Just happy in her own company.
Happy, well, until it comes to bedtime.
Okay.
And then it's like, you know, this is what we're trying to work out now is whether we do crate training, like, because we want her in her own bed. But from what I understand about, you know, the socialization of dogs, it's kind of cruel to suddenly, oh, you sleep here away from the pack. Like they don't understand, puppies don't understand that, you know, it's instinctive that they stay together and the pack represents safety, protection, food.
Am I right in saying that you can crate train in your room though? Like you can actually train in the crate close to where you are.
Yeah. That's what they, there's different schools of thought, but the thing I've been reading is like, yeah, give them a sight line to where you are so that they know. And then it's sort of an incremental introduction to the crate. So get them used to the crate. And we sort of,
I do crate training, but I just take them to like really hip cafes and make them sit on milk crates.
So are they
like,
drinking water out of mason jars like we do here at Listener? Oh, the way it just pours down your throat so easily. No spill, no mess, no fuss.
Mason jars.
Use
them
for
what they're not used, what they're not meant for. What are mason jars, actually? Just side note.
Jam.
While we're
and
jam.
Collecting fecal samples, as we've been informed by our medical audience.
Okay, fecal samples and jam.
Jam, yeah. Mm-hmm. Butter, almond butter or nut butter, if you go to a health food store, you take a mason jar in and you refill your mason jar.
You whack it, your nut butter in your mason jar.
Yeah.
That feels like
dirty.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, there's got to be some club called the mason jar, right? Come squeeze out your nut butter.
Or just if they found some like murderer's like bedroom and they're like, there was just jars full of nut butter, mason jars full of nut butter. That's what alerted us, was all the mason jars full of nut butter.
It does feel like a, like if it was Seven and they busted into Kevin Spacey's apartment. Well, I'm sure you'd find a lot of horrible
stuff. A lot of horrible stuff. He's actually he's invented an extra sin.
Yeah.
There's eight now.
His character from Seven, if you saw a shelf lined with mason jars, but just like weird, you know, like
that's
pig
creepy.
Fetuses.
Whatever it is. Yeah. Whatever was in it would be weird.
Yeah, because you shouldn't hang on to mason jars. I was hanging on to all my mason jars for a while. Because
for jam season, because you love a chutney.
Well, no, because I was trying to reduce my
carbon footprint.
Yeah, and I was like, I do most of the cooking at home, and so I'm often getting ingredients, and I'm like, well, I got these pumpkin seeds, I can go in there, and so I do have a.
Do you ever go to like those kind of
health food stores?
Yeah, where you just like get a shovel and shovel that, stuff into it.
Yes.
But you need a mason jar for that, then.
Yes, you do. And but the one I used to go to in Sydney when I lived here. They had a good policy where it was like, hey, bring
don't
in your...
Don't put your dick in it.
No. Surprisingly, that was mandatory. That was how you got into the store.
That's how we make the nut butter.
I couldn't find a jar small enough. I got one of those little hotel sample jams. It's like, finally.
Hotel sample jam.
So that's got to be the smallest jar, right? You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're saying. I stay in a lot of hotels.
But their policy was bring in, wash your mason jars, bring it in, and we'll have a little exchange shelf. So that way you could get the right one for what you needed. But where I live in the Northern Rivers now, they don't. Like there's no drop off. And so it's kind of annoying.
People are using them up in the Northern Rivers, I bet. Like, you know, for their kombucha and their whatever else, all the other potions they're making out the back of their.
Other potions. You're talking about magic mushrooms.
I mean, all sorts of potions.
Yeah, pretty
it's
much.
Nothing
that.
But potions. Potions and lotions. Get this in you. Lick a frog. Do anything but take a vaccine.
Yeah. We did this last week, didn't we? I got that. So I got that. I got letter dropped. If you haven't heard last week's episode, someone left a anti-vax flyer that was actually pretty well produced.
Made a lot of good points, Charlie thought.
But I know there is one lady on my street who is, have I told the story before about when I introduced myself to her, she's like, oh, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm an actor and my wife's a director. And she's like, oh, you've got to make a documentary. And I'm like, about what? And she's like, the scamdemic. And I'm like,
you should.
Yeah. So she.
If you were going to make a scamdemic, like, because that is a pivot that you have all the ingredients to be able to do.
Yeah,
right?
I've got the skill set to make a loose change style documentary.
Jim is a director. You're a producer. You're a writer. You are fit. Like you could tap into that sort of.
Oh, yeah. I don't take vaccines.
Fitness
and
bro.
Natural
sort
immunity.
Of, yeah, exactly. Like you've watched enough Liver King.
Bean broth. Bone broth. Bean
and
broth.
You've also watched enough WWE. Yes. You need a bit of that as well, right?
Totally. Like, this Alex is, Jones.
Yeah, style. Kinda. And you make like a
Scamdemic.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there was one called Scamdemic. So I don't think we'd have to come up with a. And I think the pandemic's now done. It has to be something.
A little jabble do ya, and then in brackets in.
Oh, okay.
A little jabble do ya in. Too long.
It's like, I mean, that could be like the tagline
Jabberwocky, Jabber Shocky.
It's about how
the WHO sluts to the kind of the Bilderberg group. They'll do anything they want.
But hang on, are we pro sluts or against sluts? Because like I don't want a slut.
Well,
shame.
No, not sexual sluts. We're against vaccine sluts.
It's like
you just bend over for
any
vaccine.
Or maybe it's an abbreviation. Like maybe it's like a, you know, it's like scientists. Loosely,
you know, scientist,
lying, scientist lying,
underhanded, tactics, scientist lies and underhand tactics,
slut. Okay, slut,
Jabba the slut,
Jabba the slut, and then asterisk,
Yeah.
And then spell out what the sign says.
It's like the hot poster is us just explaining what all the anagrams
and
are.
And then your tag about the jabs or do your brackets in.
So what would be my angle is like, okay, so generally what these, I've watched quite a few of these conspiracy docs. Yes. And it's a lot of it is about promoting your brand.
Yes.
So you've got to make yourself the Nick Broomfield, you know, or the Louis Theroux mm-hmm. of the documentary. It's yes. your experience.
Exactly.
Of, you know, and so I would sort of start it during, you'd play some kind of like a montage of COVID, you know, the Australia's
well, I think what you've
got to
do yeah, first is you've got to like account for all this, right?
Right.
Because what you already are, who you like have been previously, because the most powerful.
I've really got to concentrate to drink this messenger.
The most powerful thing I think is a repudiation, like an awakening moment. Because everyone's had this sort of when they've finally found the truth. So I think you've got to start with, hi, I'm Charlie Clawson, and you might have known me from, you know, running the beach on Home and Away, or like, yeah. you know, riding a horse on McClass. And I was portraying this very healthy lifestyle. But the whole time when I was telling everybody to everyone relax, I was actually on the side of the government spending propaganda and lies.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you've got to reject Mea everyone culpa. Relax. Everyone shouldn't relax.
Yeah.
That I would, you know, and you kind of do all that first to establish, and then it's about like why you had this awakening and you yeah. kind of guide people through the awakening.
Or, okay, so there's two options, right? Mm-hmm. You either go the documentary route where you promote your own brand, and that's, I think that works, or do you go more that kind of the sound of freedom, you know.
How oh, like those, make a movie, but tell everybody that it's like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually.
Yeah, like maybe that Kirk better. Cameron kind of Jim Cazaviezel uh-huh. sort of thing of like, because that way I guess both are works of fiction.
Right.
But maybe one you can sort of
both
dramatize.
Are works of both fiction and propaganda. But yeah. I think that if you have a script, like, because this is an opportunity for you to make a movie that you want to make, but then you just have to like squeeze in enough of this stuff and let people know that this is what the movie is really about.
Yeah.
That they get on board and that you can cash in on
it. Well, I watched a YouTuber made this video about The Sound of Freedom, which is that film about like child trafficking that was made by like a right-wing fundamentalist religious group. And they were saying, and it did really well within that market, because the guys who market it, I think they come from an advertising background, and they're all like Christian religious fundamentalists, but they took what was their disadvantage and used that as their marketing advantage, which is like, people don't want you to know the truth. The big studios won't make this film. We're the only ones brave enough to make this film. And so they sort of fed into that ecosystem that by watching this is an act of rebellion, and by buying a ticket to this film, you're actually saving a child.
That's right. Yes.
So I wonder if we could do something like that, where it's like, you know, the World Health Organization is this rogue, out of control body that wants to release your medical records,
right.
And because it's all leading towards some kind of oppressive New World Order government that want to know everything about you and track your every movement. This is a way you can fight back.
Right.
This is how you spread the word.
Because you can buy a ticket to this regardless of whether you're going to go to it or not.
Go to our Patreon.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/everyonerelax. In brackets.
Everyone.
Joe Bet the Slot.
Not. Yeah. In brackets. Asterisk.
Scientists. What do we say?
Scientists. Lies.
Underhanded tactics.
Tactics, yeah. Scientists lie. Underhanded tactics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Bet the Slot.
Joe Bet the Slot. Yeah. That's fine. It's good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so documentary, I think that starts off easy. You're right. So you might know me from, you know, blah, 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 but the whole time I was living a lie. Like you, I was asleep to the world. I was just following doctor's orders. But then something happened in 2020 that changed the world forever. Then you do the montage of blah, 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 blah.
And you do all that thing of like, you know, because I always love to say that people are paid actors.
Yeah.
No one more powerful to expose paid actors than someone who has been paid to be an actor.
Yeah. I'll tell you right? some truth. Everyone is a pedophile.
Yeah.
And I'm going to name names.
Every time you buy a ticket, we release one pedophile's name.
Yeah. And so then I say, so my family and I, we decided to get out of the city. And it was there that, you know, my mind opened for the first time. And yeah. then you can start, then you do a montage of all the talking heads, all the experts you're going to be speaking yeah. to throughout the course of the documentary.
Because like in Byron Bay too, like the Northern Rivers area, like it's not even like you'll have to travel very far.
No.
To like, you'll be able to feel this entire series, I'm saying. Like yeah. not just the film. I feel like this is like a 6-part
yeah. you
know, series or something, because there are so many people just within driving distance from your house
yeah.
who would happily sign up to this.
The skill with it, the last sort of big convo I had with someone like that, we talked about on this show, and he was threading the needle with everything. Like it yeah. was a massive conspiracy. It wasn't just the vaccine, but it was climate change, all this kind of stuff. So
okay. How about this? It's all connected.
Yes. Oh. Connected is the name of it. Yes, that's right. It's all con.
Connected is the name of the movie.
Mark but Mitchell then it's all... as Con the Fruiter on the poster. Like doing a face of like, yeah. is it? But like, I don't know. I'm just asking questions.
I think because Scamdemic was so good because of the wordplay, right? Yeah. It's easy just to say even as a joke. Connected, right? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Connected.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is with neck. No, connect is good.
Yeah.
Connected.
Yeah.
So maybe what we can do is we talk about the vaccine and COVID, and then the floods yeah. happen not long after that.
Yes.
So we thread the needle between, well, seeding. They do cloud seeding.
Oh, yeah.
Chemtrails.
When they're doing the chemtrails, they're doing the cloud
seeding. And I'm not even joking.
It's causing floods and also...
You go on the Facebook... forum for Byron Bay yeah. and the chemtrails thing happens more often than
a lot of people believe in chemtrails.
I know. A lot of people I know like believe in chemtrails. It's
I was
to
in
various
Melbourne
degrees.
When they were playing the Anzac Day game and the bombers had like a formation, you know, like a military flyover of the ground a couple of times. It was very impressive, but I was like down the street and I saw it. And I said to somebody, I said, that's chemtrails. And they looked at me like they did not know that I was joking.
I've never actually quite understood because I've heard so many different theories
of what chemtrails are.
Yeah.
Sometimes called contrails as well. So this works perfectly with connected.
So is it, because I've
this
heard.
Pretty good actually, the connected.
The two theories I've heard are one is like a DNA or genetic modification type thing. Yep. Like making the world infertile or something like that. And then the other one is more...
Not doing a very good job, are they?
No.
Heaps of people everywhere.
But then the other one is mind control.
Yeah.
So, okay, chemtrails conspiracy. This is from David Keith's Harvard University conspiracy research group. Mm-hmm.
So weird too, isn't it, that the places where the chemtrails tend to happen the most are also the places where the people don't really seem to have their minds controlled in any way.
We received many emails and letters asking about chemtrails. Many expressed deep concerns. Some are abusive or threatening. This page gives our views on the topic. This is Harvard.
Who's Harvard?
Yeah, and we
Harvard.
Need what's a dismissive.
With Harvard.
Harvard. What's a
Harvard? You know, yeah, Harvard. We're going
hardly up, believe
yeah,
you.
Yeah, hard-lid.
Hard-lid. Their brains are. It's more of that kind of leftist.
Yeah.
Academic bullshit. They're being controlled. The communists are paying off the academics
at
universities.
The academics at blah, 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 the university.
It's funny too, isn't it, how like the right wing have embraced the conspiracy. Like, because it used to be they're at opposite ends. Like the right wing conservatives were considered the enemy of the kind of conspiracy because they were the establishment. But now the right wing have swung around to the conspiracy. And so it's the left leaning that are now the kind of establishment. Okay. Chemtrails refer to the theory that the government or other parties are engaged in a secret program to add toxic chemicals to the atmosphere from aircraft in a way that forms visible plumes in the sky. Various different motivations.
It is weird that they make them visible too, isn't it? Isn't it amazing that they
why
have...
Why would you do that?
It just seems weird that we can have a clear Coke.
Yeah.
And yet, if you were a government organization trying to secretly mind control people, you wouldn't be able to come up with a clear version of that people couldn't see.
But wouldn't you need... I mean, maybe it's a safety measure to make sure other people on your side aren't in the chemtrail zone or don't fly through it.
You've got to put slight coloration in the chemtrails as a...
Just so other people... Uh-huh. So people
couldn't you just
side,
like, wouldn't it be better to send an email? I suppose you're on a paper
email.
Trail.
Mate, come on. You're so naive. It's alleged spraying to include sterilization, reduction of life expectancy, mind control... or weather control.
Okay, so the first three we can rule out because none of those things have happened.
No, mass sterilization. It's all connected.
Yeah, okay.
Australia's birth rate has dropped significantly since the 70s.
That's
true. I think it used to be like 2.1 on average, and now it's like under 2, 1.8 or whatever it is. And I think I mean, you can live in your fantasy land and say, oh, that's because
people
of
having
economic
families older and not having huge families older. And people aren't as religious as they used to be.
Chemtrails, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, wake up.
I mean, it's a good point when you say it like that. That is a much more simple solution.
We've seen no credible evidence. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
okay.
Blah, blah, blahvid. At it again.
All right. The chemistry, because of the apparent similarities between the proposed implementation methods for albedo modification, such as injective reflecting particles into the stratosphere, and the alleged methods for producing chemtrails, some people have linked the notion of chemtrails to the study of albedo modification.
Oh, yeah, albedo modification.
Albedo.
Albedo.
Albo.
Albo. Can't spell albedo without elbow.
Well, you sort of can. But clearly he has something to do with this.
Yeah.
Okay. If you, but this is from Harvard, they're asking.
Albedo.
They're asking you, Will.
Yeah.
If you believe in chemtrails.
Oh, yeah.
Ask yourself.
Okay.
How you can be so certain this is indeed a grand conspiracy.
How can I be so certain this is a grand conspiracy? Well, I watched this great documentary called
Connected. Consider the alternative. Simple explanations. Mm-hmm. Remember, the internet is filled with people who are completely sure about stuff that just isn't true.
Mm.
Remember that
So how can we trust this?
Yeah, that's
right. It's on the internet also.
Remember that while the government can keep secrets that involve only a few people, they do a very bad job of keeping large-scale programs secret.
That is true.
For example, the Russians knew specific details of the Manhattan Project before the first nuclear weapons test. And that was a case where those involved had clear patriotic motivations to keep that secret. If you think that aircraft contrails look different.
They do.
Or are behaving strangely.
They do.
Consider that regular aircraft condensation trails are sometimes long-lasting and the way they
look. I will not. I will not consider that. That sounds boring and dumb.
Can suddenly change along a flight path as aircraft fly through regions with different temperatures and
blah,
humidity.
Blah, blah, blah,
It's well understood and has been demonstrated by ground observation and by scientific research. They've put a link there, performed by thousands of people over many decades.
Okay.
Of course, it's possible, here we go, that something else is going on.
Oh, so you're saying it's possible. So you're saying
but
there's a chance.
But to prove it, one would need more than a simple photograph of something that looks entirely consistent with normal contrails.
Well, I don't have anything more than that. So that's what I'm going with. Harvard hasn't ruled it out.
That's
what I'm hearing.
They're saying there's a chance.
I'm hearing Harvard says there is a possibility that the government is controlling us with chemtrails.
Where do you think it came from? Like, who do you think started
it? I mean, people would start dumb things all the time.
But why? Like, that's what I'm interested with conspiracy theories is, like, quickly law builds up around it. And chemtrails existed before the internet, as far as I can tell, because I remember
Feels like one of the original ones. But, you know, that's looked to the skies. Human beings have always looked to the skies for the gods were in the skies or the astrology, you know, is because of the stars.
Like, what year always, do you think it started? What was the first reported incident of a chemtrail?
Well, I mean,
It's in our lifetime.
I would imagine it's like within our lifetime because you need both a plane and like, you know, the capacity to shoot something out the back of a plane. So. It's got to be, I would have said the 70s.
Later.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A really good time in our lives.
Oh, the 2000s?
Oh, probably better than the 2000s for some of us, for me specifically. The 90s, 1996 specifically.
You're saying that the 90s were better for you than the 2000s?
I think so. Well, really? Less responsibility, more fun. I mean, 2000s were fun. But when I think about the 90s, I think I consider myself a 90s.
Really?
Yeah. What do you consider? You're not a 2000s.
I consider the most fun I had to be in the 2000s, I think.
Yeah.
Like I was 25 when in the year 2000 or 26, right?
I mean,
I reckon 25 to 35 is the most fun that I've ever had in my life. If I'm taking 10-year blocks, I think I had more fun between 25 and 35 than I did between 20 and 30.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
definitely had more fun. I think it's more I'm sort of romanticizing the, you know, the when you're a teenager, that's when you find the music you like and the movies you like and you start getting those friends.
Yeah, but you also have pimples all over your back
and no cash.
Yeah, like, live on a farm, have to milk cows.
So the late 90s, the USAF was accused of spraying the US population with mysterious substances from an aircraft, generating unusual contrail patterns. The theories were posted on internet forums. Yeah. There you go.
So the internet is basically responsible for this.
Has the internet given us anything good?
Things that felt good immediately and then later on have turned out to be no good.
Yeah.
Is what mostly the internet
has
given us.
What's the best thing the internet's given us?
Podcasting?
Podcasting, YouTube. I mean, I know some people hate YouTube because of the algorithm.
Some people hate podcasting.
Who? No one hates podcasting. Who? People either like it or they're indifferent.
Podcasting is a joke. It's a butt of a joke.
But they don't hate it. No one hates it.
I think people do. I think podcasts. You got a podcast, do you?
I mean, that.
Started another podcast.
They hate you. They don't hate podcasting. They hate you. I don't think the podcast has anything to do with it from the way you're describing it. Oh, you've got a podcast.
You.
The emphasis on you.
You, Will Anderson.
It's not like, oh, you've got a podcast.
No, I mean, I hear this in popular culture.
Yeah, I think
it's become a bit, oh, you started a podcast, did you? Or they've got a podcast. People in a movie, they try to do a storyline that has a podcast and everyone rolls their eyes because there's a character in
called Ghostbusters podcast.
Yeah.
I think that has turned. I agree that was a... It was a shtick. It was an easy target. Everyone has a podcast. But I think because of the rise and fall of podcasting.
Now not everyone has a podcast again.
Exactly.
There was peak podcast. There was a podcast
high boom. Visibility.
We are back in a podcast bust again.
Yeah.
Nestled in the bust.
So I don't think people hate it. Like I've never, I'm trying to think of, there's certain podcasts that maybe Gemma and I have been on a road trip they've put on. She's like, I don't want to hear these people talking anymore. But that's not the genre or the medium.
It's so funny, isn't it, that like I do think post-pandemic that even I think we did need that connection with people in a way that perhaps we don't need it again as the world has opened up as much. And I found it myself. There's podcasts that I was listening to a lot during that time and were particularly giving me something that I needed during that time that when I see that podcast pop up in my feed now, I'm flipping by it because whatever it was giving me, I don't specifically need at the moment. And of course, that's more natural. Mm. That's a natural balance of, and I think with the internet, like more broadly, I think that's just what we've got to get to a place where we're just using it as a part of our life more. I think it came in and it offered so much and we spent so much time there because we were like, this is amazing. Look at all the incredible stuff that it can do. But then after a while, you're like, yeah, okay, but it's a lot of hype and a lot of promise and you do actually, and a lot of distraction, but maybe like it just should be something that is part of your life, not all of your life.
Yeah. It's interesting with Iona, like seeing, like trying to regulate her online time and stuff. Like there's YouTube Kids now, which is, it's just fucking amazing to think about like what we grew up with. And if we wanted to watch something and the boredom that would sink in when something was on that you didn't like, but you just have to sit with it. She doesn't have that anymore. You know, she can go onto YouTube Kids and if that video is not interesting her, she's on to the next one. But because of that, it's like, that dopamine release is so potent. We have to like very much limit her screen time. But it's that constant question of, well, they're growing up in a world in which the internet's a thing, in which people are on screens and she sees her mum and dad on the phone all the time or on their laptops or whatever. So how do you drip feed and, you know, and the puppy has definitely been a part of that motivation is like, I want her, because she's actually pretty good. Like,
So I heard Jimmy Carr talk about this, speaking of podcasts. It's so funny. I listened to Jimmy Carr he's got a new Netflix special. And look, I'm not always, a fan of everything that Jimmy does, but I love hearing him talk about the world. He's a really interesting dude. And even if I don't agree with him, I always like his point of view. But I always love listening to someone when they're on a publicity tour just to see how many like crossover points he makes on Marc Maron versus Pete Holmes' podcast and stuff. But one of the things that came up twice, but I thought it was a really interesting point, was he has a theory that we've taken out the kids, like part of human development is risk, you know, our desire to take risks, you know, and particularly when we're younger, we're driven by this idea of like, that's that idea of climbing on something or jumping off something. And then we take those risks throughout our lives. You know, we want these thrills and it's part of it. And as we've made the real world safe, like almost overprotected and safe for kids, the only way they can actually find risk is now online as well, like that it is full of risk and that is actually appealing. That's part of the appeal, is the risk of it. And so that you've almost got to like allow a bit more, which, you know, the puppy is partly taking a risk, putting a bit more risk into the real world as opposed to the online world. And I think it's really important. Like that was one of those things where I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, that you've got to make sure that they're getting what they need in terms of compelling reasons to be on the outside world.
Yeah.
Rather than being totally protected from the outside world.
Yeah. Well, it's also that thing of boredom, right? Like getting used to boredom and boredom's being okay. And that sometimes you are just bored and you have to find either find things to do or just be okay sitting with that boredom.
Just think.
Yeah.
Just let your brain run.
But it's the what is rules for thee, not for me. Like it's really hard to not be a hypocrite in this situation, because you know the temptation for me to reach for my phone in a moment of boredom is so high. So try to enforce kind of like, in my house there was a rule that we weren't allowed to watch TV in the morning before school. Like we could get a little bit of TV when we got home from school before dinner, and then homework, and then maybe a bit of TV before bed, but I don't really remember. And so we noticed, was mainly when Gemma was away and I was parenting on my own, because it's fucking difficult to like wrangle a kid and get them ready and stuff. And so if I just got her into the iPad, then I could make her breakfast.
Of course, yeah.
And then like, I could jump in the shower.
Makes sense.
Total sense.
Yeah.
But it was fucking her up. Like she was just getting super addicted to the iPad. And it wasn't putting her in a good state of mind. And then she's just getting obsessed with wanting, like she would wake up early because she wanted to watch the iPad. And so it was kind of a brutal kind of few days where we just had to sort of put our foot down and say, no, like no iPad, I'll get up with you. I'll play with you. We'll get your arts and crafts set up. But it was amazing how quickly her brain reset. And then now she doesn't really ask for it in the morning. And now there's some afternoons even where she gets home. And I'm quite willing, if she's had a full day at daycare, to be like, okay, like half an hour of iPad while I make dinner is fine. But it's good because she'll come back from daycare and she's been playing with her mates and maybe they're making something or playing some game and she wants to continue that. Or she wants to help dad make dinner, which I'm also cool with as well. It's like, but there's just these kind of lapses that you're going to have. And I talked to my friends who, once the kids get to school and you've got 2 weeks of school holidays and you're working from home and you're still trying to get shit done and trying to, if you've got more than one kid, especially, and trying to keep them off iPads and have them not fight with each other, it's like, it's a real difficult.
But this
scenario
is also this is where this danger risk like stuff comes from, which is in my day, that was just, see ya, like 9 o'clock in the morning, be back, you know, by the time the sun goes down. And that was like what we did as kids. You rode your bikes around or you played in the haystack, or if you were in like on a holiday, you know, at the beach, you went and found some other kids and like made up some games and did whatever it is that you would do in that situation. But obviously, you know, whether society is or isn't more dangerous than it used to be, there's a heightened awareness of that it is harder to that now.
I think there was a great podcast they were talking, I can't remember, Invisibilia.
Podcast. You've got a podcast. Do you, mate?
Invisibilia, where they talked about this one town in particular where like it's actually a lot safer than it was 20 or 30 years ago. But the coverage of bad events has made parents. And so it was this juxtaposition of these parents who had grown up. It was all framed around there was this wood in this town that all the parents who lived there now, when they were kids, they would play in. But now none of the kids play in there because the parents are scared of something bad happening. Because I'm sure bad stuff does happen from time to time. And it's like, well, what has changed this mindset where we trusted, our parents trusted us and we managed to survive this. But now.
Law and order. Lauren,
the TV show Law and Order,
like 40 seasons of Law and Order, of everyone getting murdered every week,
kidnapped.
Yeah.
Well, I guess. Yeah, I mean,
but I mean, I don't mean Law and Order specifically, but I mean so much media coverage, not only on the news of these.
Well, there's
things
also stuff that our parents allowed us to do that in retrospect, you're like, oh, wow. Mm. Like that was, and they just, because they didn't know any better, you know, no. like that thing of just opening the doors and, you know, as kids, because I'm 1 and 9, like by the time mum got to me, she was like, ugh.
Yeah,
whatever you like, want to do, like I don't, you'll be fine. Like the other,
if a stranger wants to give you lollies, yeah. I'm not giving you any.
But truthfully, I remember really clearly, me and my sisters, like on a school holidays or something like that, riding down to the beach, and there was this surf club there, and it was a really windy, cold, wet day, so there was none at the beach, and we were riding around on our bikes, and my sisters, I was annoying them, so they rode off and they left me there on my own, and this man emerged from the toilets and was trying to get me to go into the toilets with him. And I was like, and I had enough sense. I didn't know what was going on, but I had enough sense to know you don't go with strangers. And I rode back home and told like my mum, but my sisters, because they didn't want to get in trouble for leaving, they accused me of lying. So I retracted my story because I was like, in the face of like such grilling cross-examination. But no one was at fault there. Like it was just like,
well,
it
was, the guy was.
Well, the guy was at fault. Well, who knows? I mean, he may have had a genuine reason to lure a child into a toilet.
Yeah,
into the toilet.
No, you're right.
Like, maybe
might have had a reason.
He dropped his wallet into the toilet in a small hand to get into the S bend.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because I've actually replayed that in my mind quite a bit, and I honestly don't know. Like, it didn't feel sinister. Like, I don't remember. Like, in my mind, it was just an old man who had an inquiry. Yes, I couldn't quite hear
him. Because you didn't put anything sinister on it. But I think if you were viewing it again today, you would just think,
Whatever
he needs help with.
He doesn't need it from a 7-year-old.
Yeah, and also you can come out here if you need a 7-year-old to help you with something. You can't bend over to tie your shoe or whatever.
My memory of it was he emerged from the toilet and, he walked up, because I'm on the beach, and he walked from the toilets and he came up to the edge of the beach and he was asking me something I couldn't hear because it was so windy.
Yeah.
And I was saying, what? And he was asking me something, and then I...
Have you ever seen an elephant?
A white elephant? he walked one direction. No, I walked one direction, and he walked that direction, and then I walked that, and then, I mean, he's sort of mirroring my movements.
Oh, yeah. No, nothing sus.
Yeah, I guess it was.
It's so sus. It was like so sus. I'm always willing to give people a repressed memory.
I'm always willing to give people the benefit of the doubt, even potential child.
Anyway, you know where there's no bad people? The internet. So get them on their iPad. And everything will be fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's fucking worse.
Yeah, it's heaps worse. It's full of
groomers and
people trying
weird,
to
creepy people lure you pretending into the public toilet. 12-year-olds yeah. And yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess there's no.
Anyway, this is Todd Bob. Thanks for listening. We've got a Patreon page. Yeah.
In my mind, I'm like, how can I nuke my internet connection?
It's been a real journey, this episode. We started with just the fun of two guys in one trench coat trying to pretend.
Oh, my God. I even forgot we started that way. You're right. Why don't we get to a little bit of mail?
We got mail?
We've got heaps of mail.
Okay, let's just get through some mail.
This is an old one, and I just wanted to. This comes back to your performance at the Adelaide Fringe.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to get to it before it got too out of date. It's from Alicia.
Keys?
No. Yeah. Well, maybe. No surname. Mm-hmm. Hi, long-time listener to most of the pods.
Okay.
What do you think Alicia does not listen to?
Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL-related podcast.
She's from Adelaide, though. Big South Australia, big football town.
Maybe that's why, though. Maybe she's anti-football because it's too football-focused.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I introduced my son to TOEFOP during year 12 to help him relax.
Uh-huh, everyone relax.
Before going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
He's a longtime fan of Gruen and loved Will's books also. So I took him to the Hobart I Am Not Okay event last year.
Okay.
Anyway, he's the kid that Will had a bit of a riff with during the Adelaide Fringe sessions. Remember this?
Yeah, who's moved to... Ah, interesting. Yeah, I do remember this because specifically I found out...
So it's okay for you to talk to a kid, but that guy was talking to me at the beach that day.
There was a lot of witnesses. It was a tent full of witnesses. But I do think...
And you didn't emerge from
also, I do think at one point, well, backstage at Adelaide Fringe is not dissimilar to emerging from a toilet. So it's a fine line. but yes, no, so young person there by himself. He was at University O Week studying in Adelaide. And so I got a bit of the backstory. He had moved there from Hobart and come over by himself come to the show during his O week.
Well, you made his night.
Oh, nice.
So Mum Alicia was just writing in to say thanks. I mean, that's a good, maybe that's what you should be leaning on to get more like Patreon subscribers or something, is parents. If you listen to the show and you're a fan and you're a parent, like round about 15 plus, start introducing.
Mate, I've got to be honest with you. I'm starting to see it in my shows.
Oh, like, kids.
As in kids who've been introduced by their parents.
Oh, good.
The generation.
Fuck, maybe this is the cash cow we've been.
I feel like if we're just
game.
Holding out,
yeah.
It just feels like it's starting now that there's enough distance between, like, you know, like, because you go through that period of like you're young and cool and hip and whatever, and you get a bit older, and then of course newer, younger people come along, and young people don't want to be associated with the people who've been there forever. They want to like be associated with the new cool people.
Yeah.
But then if you last long enough, if you can just get through that period, you get that next wave again of the young people who are kind of discovering the bands that their parents were into. We're like that equivalent.
Yeah.
I just feel like we just got to get through this like next
hump. We're going to survive.
We do, yes. Like, I mean, obviously if you are a parent, maybe just some incidental listening, maybe even because there's nothing a teenager likes more than being told they shouldn't be listening to something.
Yeah,
so
right.
So if you're listening turn it off when they come in.
Yeah.
Add a bit of mystery. Don't try to like force it on them because I don't think that'll.
Did your parents ever try to like lay down the law with you about like music or TV shows that you were
My dad's
to watch?
Never bought an album or listened to music ever in his entire life. So no.
It was all open slather.
Like, not once.
I remember once.
My dad, who when famously at the AFL Grand Final, Meatloaf is meant to be like famously the worst performance ever at the AFL Grand Final, my father, who was there with me, we were quite near where Meatloaf was when he was singing, turned to me and said, was it meant to sound like that? Even he kind of knew that wasn't how it was meant to sound. My mother had three albums when I was growing up.
Okay.
Three albums.
The Seekers?
One of them may have even been The Seekers. I can remember two of them distinctly. I can't remember what the it wasn't. I can remember what the three are now. Yeah.
Okay. So
one of them was
70s.
Actually four. She had four albums
vinyl.
That I can remember. Four vinyl albums that I can remember growing up. So I reckon one of them was an album that one in every three Australian households had at one stage was the statistic.
No,
not an Australian act. An act that is still very popular as a worldwide touring act, and one of their songs has been particularly associated with sporting events in Australia, but also worldwide.
Okay.
It's a song that gets sung, like one of these, but this person has a huge catalogue of songs, but one of their songs is a huge football sing-along song.
So it's an individual, it's a singer.
It's an individual,
singer-songwriter.
Yes. Correct. Yes.
Mums
love this person.
Yeah. So I'm thinking like Elton John's going to be too bawdy for your mum. Maybe just a little too.
I think this person was also seen as a bit of a sex symbol to
Tom Jones.
Yeah, in that zone, but not Tom
Engelbert
Jones.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Not Engelbert Humperdinck. Think a bigger star than Engelbert Humperdinck. Tom Jones level star. Rod Stewart, good areas as well, but not Rod Stewart.
Oh, man.
Think
Elvis Presley?
Think pressure.
Freddie Mercury?
Sorry, that's two. I've given you two.
David Bowie?
No, this was a more cryptic clue. Think all pressure. Right. What does pressure make?
Diamond, Neil.
Neil Diamond.
Neil
Hot
Diamond.
August Night. Apparently one in three Australian households owned that
we
album.
Had that, we had
point.
That album.
Yeah.
We are one
great
of those
album.
Three. Yeah,
Hot August Night. Sweet Caroline, of course. I was. I mean, Crazy Good Old Sweet. Yeah, I am, I said. It's like so many good songs.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one. Another one is a group that
album cover. What is going on in the Hot August? Do you remember the album cover photo? It's Neil kind of mid-convulsion. And it's like, why did you, of all the shots that were taken?
Because it was a Hot August Night.
I guess.
Also back then, I'm not sure they took a lot of shots. It was real hard.
Yeah, that's right. Because film cameras back then, you could only take one photo.
Yeah, that was it. That's all we got. all right. The other one was a group that was huge.
Your mum going for Neil Diamond is kind of surprised because he's pretty sexy.
Yeah, so but sexy, but also sexy, safe. I think. Yeah, safe and sexy. This one's more safe.
Okay.
group that was hugely popular in Australia.
Ah.
Like an international group, but like group hugely popular in Australia. In fact, I think Australia might have been
the country
that was they had the biggest outside their own country.
Oh, ABBA.
ABBA, correct. Yep. She had an ABBA album.
Yep.
Then an artist that I've already mentioned on this.
Okay.
Very recently.
Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
Your mum had Bat Out of Hell.
Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. Hot August Night.
ABBA. I can't get
and
a
one more.
Read on.
Now, this last one you will never get.
Okay.
In a million years, I reckon.
Okay, but, what artist
the best,
from where?
The
what
best,
country?
The best clue I can give you is, in fact, I think maybe this might, if I give you this clue, when you said Engelbert Humperdinck, what is, if I said, who's the female Engelbert Humperdinck, who would
Nana Mouskouri.
Wow! That's good. Well,
I think it's when you grow up in our era, there was certain, because I'm sure we had a Nana Mouskouri. And I'm like, how is this woman?
I don't even know what Nana Mouskouri really is.
Nana Mouskouri, she had a thick black, yep, like she's the most unpop star looking pop star.
And but I think what was Nana Mouskouri's
big song?
Big song?
I don't know. Nana Mouskouri. If you had to guess what her...
You Don't Bring Me Flowers, but that's like Barbara Streisand or someone.
Nana Mouskouri.
But it feels like that's the sort of
vibe. You spell it like Nana? Nana
Mouskouri. I reckon there's not going to be a whole bunch of...
Mouskouri.
I reckon it should auto-complete Nana Mouskouri, you would have thought.
I have no internet. Hang on. Let me try again.
Okay.
This is...
I mean, we're just saying Nana Mouskouri.
Nana Mouskouri. It sounds like a punchline. And I remember at high school, it kind of was a punchline. Like if you wanted to tease a guy, you'd say, you love Nana Mouskouri. Okay, Nana Mouskouri, spelt like Nana.
Yep.
She's Greek. She's born in 1934. She's a singer and politician.
Oh, yeah.
She's released, how many albums do you think she's released?
Oh, heaps. Yeah. I reckon heaps.
Guess, number.
I know that like Aha, like release, or one of those bands release, like, so 40, let's say 40. Higher, 80. Higher, 120. Higher, shut up.
I'm telling you.
156 albums. 200
albums. 200
albums. Shut up.
Absolutely.
That cannot be true.
And she did that in languages including Greek, French, English, German, Dutch, Portuguese, Italian, Japanese, okay, Spanish, Hebrew, Welsh, Mandarin, Chinese, and Corsican.
Okay, so they're counting. So one album translated into
So you're dismissing the Mouskou. The Mouskou.
No, I think that's even more impressive.
Hey, you know what her real first name is?
Daughter Mouskouri.
Iona.
Iona Mouskouri.
Iona.
Really?
Yeah, Iona. Ooh, Nana. Okay. It's shortened to Nana Mouskouri. It's not spelled the same as Iona, but it's very close.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Okay, so she started in the 60s. What's Rose of Athens was her first song.
What's her biggest song?
1963, she represented Luxembourg in Eurovision with the song A Forced Appear. Doesn't say what her biggest song. Oh, God, there's so many of them. No number ones that I can see.
No number ones.
Number two was a French song. Hey. Oh, number two. She had all her big hits seem to be in other languages.
Okay.
Tragudia apota elekina.
Oh, okay.
Probably, yep. I am definitely butchering
that. No, that's exactly how it...
In 2011, reached number two on the charts in what country? In Greece.
Okay.
Any Australian number ones?
Yeah. Why was Nana Mouskouri so popular in Australia?
Yeah, ask your mum.
Can you Google that? Why was Nana Mouskouri big in Australia?
She had an album. All right, let's relate. I'm going to read you the English, some of the English titles of her albums. They're long. Well, we thought scientists, liars, underhanded tactics, Jabba the Slut was a long title. In New York, The Girl from Greece Sings was her first album.
But it's probably like, in New York, The Girl from Greece Sings.
The Exquisite, Nana Mouskouri was the name of her third album. Turn on the Sun. 1970.
Turn on the Sun.
That has two meanings. Turn on, I mean, that sounds like a category on Pornhub, doesn't it?
Turn on the
Sun. Turn on the Sun.
Yeah. MILFs who like to turn on suns. Turn on the Stepson.
Nana Mouskouri's Grand Gala.
Uh-huh.
She's just got one called British Concert.
Yeah, okay.
Nana, not trying there.
Nana gave zero fucks by 1972. Uh-huh.
Greatest hits, of course. Christmas with Nana Mouskouri. This album is called Songs from Her TV Series. They're very literal. Maybe that's because she's singing in all these different
languages.
Yeah,
exactly. So you can't have like puns or wordplay.
Yeah, well, except Turn on the Sun.
Mm. But I mean, it's not like a Nana Mouskouri like pun is what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you
can't Nana in pajamas.
Or yeah, Nana, yeah.
That's yes. Like a
Nana.
Nana in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
An album just called Passport. Roses and Sunshine, Come With Me,
mm-hmm.
The very best of Nana Mouskouri. That was in 1981.
The very best.
It felt like there was
not
a
just
lot
the best,
to go.
The very best.
This, she's got two songs. In 1986, she had an album called Only Love Songs. In 87, she released another album called Why Worry, but with no question mark. So is that a statement?
Why?
Can you ask why without it being a question?
Why?
Why worry?
Why worry?
Why worry? Now, it's always going to be a question, doesn't it?
I mean...
Why worry?
I guess...
Unless you are worrying about why, that would be a why worry, and that's not a question. Like, I'm always worried...
But what if why equals worry? Then...
it's a why worry? This album, 87, she's just gone Metallica's Blackout. Nana.
I thought you literally were like, she did a cover version of Metallica's Black Album.
No, A Voice from the Heart, The Magic of Nana Mouskouri, yeah. The classic. She, I mean,
that would be great if that one was her doing magic, though.
Yeah.
Just like, pick a card. Pick a card, any card.
Taylor Swift is prolific. Uh-huh. Nana Mouskouri released three albums in 1988.
Is she still with us, Nana? Like, is she deceased or is she still alive, Nana Mouskouri?
Still, she's 89.
No. Uh-huh.
Living in Greece, in Crete. In a crate training.
In a crate, she's crate training.
Grace.
You know what I love about this is I would love if she went back and did all 200 albums, Nana's versions.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor Swift style.
Just to get the copyright
yeah.
So she can own it. She released her final greatest hits album in 2002, just called Gold.
Okay.
And Homages was another one. She's had several best ofs. I have no idea. So why is she popular in Australia?
Yeah. Why was Nana Mouskouri popular in Australia?
Nana Mouskouri. Oh, we had a big Greek population. That could be why.
Yeah. But why did a Nana Mouskouri album find its way to Anderson's Road in
Denison?
It's
the third search on Google. Yeah. Why is she popular in Australia? Nana Mouskouri was immensely popular in Australia and her concerts in 1974 were well received by audience. Her captivating voice and stage presence made her a beloved artist in the country.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you could say that for anyone though.
I know, but why, yeah, why specifically Australia? Like why was she, like why, like think about it. Those top three there, Neil Diamond, ABBA, Meatloaf, still three of the biggest, like, you know, like acts in the entire world, particularly of the time. And then Nana Mouskouri. The fourth one. How has Nana made that list?
Says here. Mm. So okay, this is a. She went on Q&A.
The ABC TV show Q&A.
I think so.
That can't be right.
Yeah, it says here in 2015, the popular panel
in 2015. Yep. Nana Mouskouri was a guest on the ABC's Q&A.
The popular panel discussion show returns tonight. Relive last week's discussion that gave some attention to Greece's economic and political situation thanks to Nana Mouskouri's inclusion.
Oh, so you said she was a politician now.
Nana Mouskouri overshadowed many of the Q&A panelists this week as the Greek songstress chimed in on numerous Australian topics like children in detention, tax evasion,
Nana Mouskouri,
and distrust in politics.
Oh my God.
The octogenarian singer and former member of the EU Parliament appeared on the ABC panel show while in Australia to perform a number of concerts.
Wow.
Mouskouri's defining moment on the show was when she prevailed over the political psychobabble and gave her views on children in detention. Having worked as a UNICEF ambassador, Mouskouri was visibly shocked to discover that Australia had a current record of keeping children in detention.
Oh.
I'm surprised for Australia. I didn't know. The world needs a little more humanity, she said. Mouskouri also said under no circumstances should children be in detention and called for the government to change tack. Let's put some humanity into the laws and really protect the children. You're playing with the lives that are going to build a better world, so give them a chance to do that. Holy shit. Mouskouri was joined on the panel by Ed Husic, Van Badham, Parliamentary Secretary Kelly O'Dwyer and blah, 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 blah. In light of the heated anti-Islamic protests across Australia, Ms. Guri drew parallels to Greece's neo-fascist party, the Golden Dawn, and admitted she was worried about their popularity. She saw this coming. Ms. Guri replied, no, I cannot reason with them. But, you know, the problem is that people have voted and so they're in the parliament. As a true pacifist, Ms. Guri hoped of reaching a solution through the discourse and not receiving each other as enemies.
Ms. Guri also said that there was a pandemic coming, that was all a plan,
and it's all connected. Well, of course, comes back to Mark Mitchell, the most famous Greek of all time. okay, that is a TOEFOP for this week. We gave a little Patreon a shout out. It would really be great
help
if you
us.
Could go and join
help
our
us,
Patreon.
Please.
Patreon.com.
Things aren't great here at TOEFOP HQ at the moment.
We need to keep the lights on.
Everyone literally. Can't relax. It's a bit of a tough time in the world of podcasting. We're trying our best to, you know, make it all work financially. But yes, if you do have, I know cost of living for everyone is really difficult at the moment across everything. So for those who do support us, we super appreciate it. For those, if you have, you know, as much, only as much as you could give.
Yes.
That's why we try to make everything on our Patreon
accessible
to everybody.
Yeah.
Is like, we understand that not everybody can give to certain levels. You can sign up for as little as you can sign up for and get access to everything that is there.
And you can also chat with me because from time to time I go into the chat room.
Absolutely not.
And
me.
Not Will.
Not me.
And I actually asked, I went in last week and I said, hey, look, we want to give you guys value for money.
Yes.
We want to bring more people in. What do you want to see? Everyone's basically, look, more of the same. They want to see more videos and stuff.
Yes,
so I think we'll start uploading maybe some philosophy videos to the Patreon as well. So
and we are, this is why we're in the same studio. Again, we're doing these like bulk records.
Yeah,
this one was bananas, and just for people who are listening to it, and by banana muscuris, for the people who are listening to it, this is our first one of a long day of recording. so strap yourself in.
Are you on tour?
I am on tour. Will Legitimate is the name of my show, and I am incredibly proud of it. I'm having such a great time. By the time, when are people hearing this? Where are we up to now?
This schedule? Next week or the week after?
First week of May, 8th of May.
Week of May, which means that they may, what day is today?
Today
are they
is
may,
the 28th.
Oh, yeah, first week of May, they may be able to see me at the Brisbane Comedy Festival. If not, then after that, Sydney Comedy Festival, definitely.
Yeah.
At the Enmore and the Concourse in Chatswood, and then after that, the Perth Comedy Festival and a whole bunch of other places as well. They are all on sale, comedy.com.au.
And I should also plug, I'm doing Alexi's show, The Last Video Store, tomorrow, so that may be out by the time people hear this. So
yeah, I had a whole bunch of podcasts that I did during the Comedy Festival, Confessions,
that's an understatement.
Little Dum Dum Club, Flight, the Luke Heggie and
Mid-Flight Brawl,
Nick Cody Show. I did some other ones as well. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of those that are floating around. So if you want to hear some other stuff as well, it's all out there.
All right. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.